The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hey folks, I challenge you to think of at least one thing you no longer do that you wish you could. Do you miss like playing golf, maybe long walks with your spouse, sleeping through the night? Are you ready to start living without pain? My colleagues and friends, Hugh Hewitt, Dennis Prager, Mike Gallagher, have been talking about their own successful experience with Relief Factor, and you can add Eric Metaxas to that list. Relief Factor is changing the lives of tens of thousands of Salem radio listeners by reducing and even eliminating daily aches and pains. ReliefFactor.com is full of great success stories, and now I am on board. For just $19.95, Relief Factor is offering a three-week quick start that could help you live your life with little to no pain. Go to ReliefFactor.com to see testimonials from folks all over the country. I love reading them. Over 70% of those that try Relief Factor continue as a customer. Feel the relief and get back your independence and freedom from the aches and pains of everyday life. Go to ReliefFactor.com. Read the testimonies. I tell all my relatives to take it. ReliefFactor.com.
To the Eric Metaxas Show.
I shouldn't tell you this, but Eric hired someone who sounds just like him to host today's show. But since I'm the announcer, they told me. So I am telling you, don't be fooled.
The real Eric's in jail.
And welcome.
Hey, folks, welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show bunker version. We're in the bunker. We're in our various bunkers because, as you may have heard, I don't know if you're a news junkie, but evidently there's some kind of coronavirus going around. I'm not taking it very seriously. But I'm not leaving home either. Okay, so today is April Fool's Day.
Yes.
Now, when I say that, am I kidding? No, actually, I'm not. It's April Fool's Day. And we've got Albin. We've got Chris Himes. Guys, I share a couple of things real quick, like okay. That are very important.
Okay, but I'm here. Cough.
Okay. This is very important. This is an official announcement. You guys remember how yesterday – I was talking about what we're watching on TV and how we all need to go watch No Safe Spaces, that Dennis Prager and Adam Carolla made this incredible film, No Safe Spaces, and how we need to watch it. And then I said, oh, and by the way, I'm watching this and this and this. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you remember I referred to something called Hunderby?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
You said it was a little bit bawdy.
I said it was a little bawdy. Well, yesterday at dinner – and by the way, our daughter is now cooking us dinner. It's the sweetest thing. So we're sitting down at dinner and Suzanne says, I guess she read up on Hunderby and she goes, oh, it gets really bad. And I thought, what do you mean really bad? Like I recommended it qualitatively with qualifications on my program. And she starts mentioning a few things that go well beyond bawdy. And so last night, I broke out in hives thinking that my audience is going to go to watch this thing. And they're going to. So I watched further on. Right. There is some stuff in there that goes leagues beyond bawdy into it's almost like, you know, it's like hard R rating sexual content. And I just realized the first thing I need to say on this program is. Ixnay on the Hunderby. Hey, I cannot recommend it. It really was. It's a pity because some of it is so funny, but they go way beyond the bounds of something I could recommend. It just kills me.
It's almost like you recommended the show Breaking Bad, which is based on the first episode about a high school chemistry teacher.
That exactly.
Yeah. Who has cancer. And well, we're going to see how it turns out, but I hope he gets healed.
Yeah, no, it's what, but so much stuff that I watch over the years, like I really love it, but then there's one or two things that wreck it as something that I can recommend, which sure. Always bothers me because yeah. There is a lot in this to recommend it. It's brilliantly funny, but there's some content in it which some people will, you know, they'll have my head on a pike if they watch it on my recommendation. So I can no longer stand behind it. Okay, we got that out of the way. I've got a story I want to tell about Mike the Situation, you know, from the Jersey Shore.
Yeah.
Okay, this I think is lunacy. And then we've got an April Fool's story that Chris Himes, you and I were involved in this 4 years ago.
Yes.
We need to tell that story. People aren't going to believe it. Some already know it, but yesterday I turned on the TV while I was exercising in my bunker and I saw Bill Hemmer on Fox News, right? And Bill Hemmer is a stand-up guy. I love Bill Hemmer. I don't think I've ever met him, but just a great guy, journalist. And who comes on, because it's nonstop Corona talk, he brings on Mike the Situation from the Jersey Shore. Mike the Situation Sorrentino from the Jersey Shore. Because evidently, stupid young people on the Jersey Shore, no doubt inspired by Mike the Situation and that show, have been partying excessively during this time of global pandemic. So somebody in Jersey said, hey, what if we get Mike the Situation Sorrentino to, you know, voice a public service announcement telling them, hey, you know, come on, we want to flatten the curve and, you know, you just need to stay home. So they get him to do a PSA. They play the PSA on Fox News. And then Bill Hemmer brings on Mike the Situation Sorrentino to chat with him. And Bill Hemmer, who, as I said, is an amazing journalist, just a wonderful guy, asks Mike the Situation a question that I immediately stop what I'm doing and look at the screen, because I thought, did he just ask like a really deep question to Mike the Situation Sorrentino? Because he did. Mike Hemmer says to Mike the Situation Sorrentino, so Mike, what do you make of everything that's happening? You're right across the river there in Jersey and you see everything that's going on. What do you think the larger meaning of this is for the world and our time in history, or something like that? So I put down my dumbbells and I said, now, what is Mike going to say? I don't think he was prepared for this. And I don't think Bill Hemmer thought through whether he ought to ask this kind of a big question to Mike the Situation. So are you curious how Mike answered?
Yeah.
All right. Well, since you really, really want to hear this, I'll tell you. He makes a couple of comments and then he says, listen, bottom line, you know, united we stand. And by the same token, united we fall.
There you go. That's great.
I said, that goes in the history books. I almost immediately called up my brother, because that's the kind of stuff that, you know, we've known people like this growing up in the New York area. But the idea that he goes, united we stand. By the same token, united we fall. And I thought, what did he just say? Like, that's brilliant. That's like Yogi Berra genius, Mobius strip logic genius. Yeah. United we stand, by the same token, united we fall. Anyway, I just had to share that. Okay, yeah. So MyPillow is in hour two today. But before, actually, we've got John Zmirak coming up. Stay tuned. In a few minutes, we got John Zmirak coming up. But I think right now, Chris, we need to tell the story of what we did 4 years ago
right
on April Fool's Day.
Yeah. So, you know, when we first started the show, season one, we were in the Empire State Building, and
right.
We thought it would be funny to kind of do a War of the Worlds Orson Welles radio drama around April Fool's and kind of do a little silly radio drama prank. And
yeah.
So you had a crazy idea.
Right. Well, I had a crazy idea. And this was back when I was very young and creative, before I sold out. And this is exactly 4 years ago. I happened to be on a trip to Atlanta. No, not to Atlanta, to another place in Georgia, like Sea Island, Georgia, where I had to do a speaking thing. So I had my microphone and everything with me and the Comrex box so we could do the show from wherever I am. So you were in the Empire State Building in the studio, but I was in a hotel room in Georgia.
Oh, that's right.
And
forgot about that.
I pretended. Yeah, this was a piece of acting. I should get an award for this. I pretended that I was with you in the Empire State Building, and we made it sound like there's sirens, what's going on down there.
Yeah.
And we looked down. We pretended to be looking out the window of the Empire State Building, like, hey, what's going on down there? We see sirens. We see something going on. And then we pretended to run to the other side of the Empire State Building, see if we could see anything from there. And we see all these emergency vehicles and stuff like this.
Right.
And then we basically said someone dressed like Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Is climbing up the Empire State Building.
Right. Right.
And it must be an April Fool's prank.
Yeah.
And so we kept doing reports throughout the hour of the progress of this Donald Trump lookalike dressing up as a prank, because this is when Trump was running for office. This was
right.
This was early 2016. So Trump's running for office. His name is in the news. And we just thought it would be a funny, kooky thing. So we kept, you know, after the commercial, we'd come back with a different report and this and that. And of course, I played it so hard that I myself believed it, even though I was in a hotel room in Georgia.
And we were doing the Radio Magic thing where we added in some sirens, some street noise and things like that.
Yeah, so you did all that. You made it sound authentic. And then we said that he's climbing around to our side of the building. Oh my gosh, we can see him from here. And we're describing this like with such vividness that everyone believed it.
Right.
And then we pretended that he jumped off. And you know what? We're going to go to a break. We'll be back with Zmirek at the end of the hour, folks. We'll tell you the rest of this kooky story. Stay tuned for John Zmirek.
Someone called us Babylon. Those hungry hunters tracking down the hours. Just yesterday morning, they let me know you were gone.
Hey there, folks. Welcome back. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. We're under quarantine, so if you're watching us on video, you can see that we're all in our separate bunkers. But our special guest for the day, John Zmirek, is always in his bunker, so really nothing has changed at all. John Zmirek, welcome.
Thank you, Eric. You're right. My life has changed not very much. I'm doing takeout and over tipping to try to make up for one of my favorite restaurants are losing. But I work from home with the dogs anyway. Basically, instead of being with me 22 hours a day, they're with me 24 hours a day. That's so they're handling the crisis really well.
Well, let me ask you. First of all, you've written a lot of articles for the Stream, and if anybody ever wants to read articles that John has written at stream.org. I'm posting them, I think, every day on my Facebook page and on my Twitter feed. And of course, you should follow John on Twitter if you're not doing that. But John, so what are some of the things you've been writing about and talking about?
Well, for instance, struck me what Andrew Cuomo said a few days ago about the coronavirus crisis in New York City, which is my beloved hometown. I live in Dallas now, but I love New York. Grew up in New York City. I'm a subway rat. I'm the subway pizza rat. I'm a native New Yorker, but I can't stand some of the things Cuomo has been saying and doing.
Right.
The worst one was where he said that the New York State and city were hardest hit because of their welcoming spirit. They had 15 times the coronavirus cases of California. According to Cuomo, quote, because we welcome people from across the globe. We have people coming here from China, from Italy, from all across the globe. In other words, what he's saying is exactly what Pat Buchanan said 10 or 15 years ago, that massive uncontrolled immigration is a vector, a superhighway for diseases. But when Pat Buchanan said it, that was a terrible, bad thing. He was a bad man. When Cuomo says it because he's for it, because he's bragging about it, all of a sudden the rest of the country is supposed to say, oh, okay, well, thank you for your welcoming spirit. We're going to pour money into your state, into your sanctuary state, where you won't even enforce our immigration laws, but we'll pay for the privilege. Even though you don't act like you're part of the country because you won't enforce our immigration laws, we're going to subsidize your welcoming spirit.
Well, as with all things, once they turn political, don't they immediately simply become confusing? For example, what Cuomo said, in other words, by framing things as a welcoming spirit, New York having a welcoming spirit, that's baloney. OK, New York is where people have been getting off the boat for 150 years. So whether they are greeted with stones to the head for being ugly Irish or whether they are genuinely welcomed is not the issue. The issue is that New York City has been, since the founding of this country, where most people enter the country. And so the reason I live in New York right now is because my mother from Germany landed on a ship and came to New York. And my father came on a ship a year later in 55 and came to New York City and settled in Queens, where your family grew up. So
this is
kind of a basic demographic thing. It has nothing to do with whether one is being welcoming. And so he was, I guess, maybe we can forgive him for putting it that way, unless you're suggesting that he was saying that people like Trump are not welcoming.
Well, yes. I mean, New York is a sanctuary state. It will not enforce immigration laws. It releases criminals on the street rather than turn them over to ICE. That's what he means by New York having a welcoming spirit, welcoming illegal immigrants into the country on behalf of the country, despite the wishes of the entire rest of the country,
right,
as expressed in its immigration laws. The state of New York flouts our national immigration laws. Imagine if the state of Texas just decided we're not going to obey, you know, the nation's driving age technically is a state issue. Drinking age is a state issue, but they federalized it. They forced every state to do a 21 drinking age.
Right.
What if Texas decided, well, no, we want to let people drink at age 14? I don't think the rest of the country would appreciate that. I think they would take action to pressure Texas not to let 14-year-olds drink hard alcohol. But Cuomo thinks he can do that with our immigration laws, which are federal. In fact, they're giving what are effectively driver's licenses to illegal immigrants in New York, which they can use as legal ID in the rest of the country. That undermines all of our identification, you know, our efforts at secure ID for people and voting. So
actually, this is I find this funny and annoying, like much of life. The fact is that because I have a New York state driver's license, as of October, it will no longer work as ID at airports. I have to get a new official New York driver's license because New York, the state of New York, gives driver's licenses to plenty of people who ought not to have them, like people who are here illegally. And so I now have to get an upgraded driver's license if I want to use it as my ID going through airport security.
Well, again, that's the rest of the country having to adapt to the demagogic behavior of Andrew Cuomo, who wants to be seen as a champion of illegal immigrants.
Yeah.
Now, what I find interesting is this is an example of a principle you can apply across American politics. I call it denial of courseism. Denial of courseism. Pat Buchanan and Coulter say mass immigration is going to fuel exotic diseases coming into America. Everybody denies it. The liberals deny it. They say you're a racist, you're a xenophobe, you're a monster. Then when it becomes obviously true and undeniable, they say, well, of course, because we have a welcoming spirit and you should accept that consequence. Likewise with the Equal Rights Amendment. Phyllis Schlafly warned that if the ERA passed, they'd be getting rid of women's bathrooms, getting rid of women's sports, that it would put abortion permanently in the Constitution, which it currently really isn't, despite the Supreme Court. She warned of all these consequences. And the left, they denied it. They waved her off and said she was crazy. Now that they're willing to openly cop to all those things that they want, they say, yes, of course, Equal Rights Amendment includes all that. And if you don't favor that, you're a transphobe. But they never even give her credit for being right, for seeing the logical implications of the policies when she was warning against them. This is the left constantly calls conservatives, you know, you're Chicken Little. You're saying the sky is falling. You're crazy. Then when great big pieces of sky have fallen and are littering the highways and blocking the roads, then they accuse us of being skyphobes. Of course the sky was supposed to fall. That was our plan all along. Why are you so skyphobic?
You know, John, I didn't mention it to you, but today is April Fool's Day. And I think people are, you know, anticipating or half anticipating that you and I will be involved in some tomfoolery. Right now, we're being deadly serious, are we not?
Yes. All this is real.
We could have done something very meta. and you know, pretended to be for everything that Cuomo is for. But we just don't have the patience or the energy for that right now. We've right. just got to be straight. In hour two, by the way, we're going to be for anybody listening to us right now. I just want to be clear. In hour two, we're playing an encore, an April Fool's encore that we did 1 year ago with Mike Lindell of MyPillow.com fame. He's been in the news lately. And as I always say, if you order anything from MyPillow.com, please use the code Eric. I think Mike Lindell is a hero and a champion. And actually, it's something I wanted to touch on with you is how people were very upset, people in the mainstream media, including people on Fox News on the Five, at Mike Lindell's few pro-family, pro-God comments in the Rose Garden. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's shocking that a private citizen at a public event is supposed to not talk about God. And I think, I mean, if you remember, our founders talked about God incessantly. George Washington called for days of national fasting, prayer, and humiliation, as he called it, humbling ourselves in order to get God's blessing. Abraham Lincoln did it. I mean, and president after president, most of the great presidents. Franklin Roosevelt talked about God in public speeches. But all of a sudden now a private citizen who makes pillows is imposing a theocracy if he talks about prayer at a press conference. And you know, it's funny. I think if it had been a Muslim, nobody would be complaining. They'd be too scared to. If it were a Black Christian, they would cut him slack because liberals are willing to wave off the religiosity of Black Americans like it's cute, you know. Yeah, they believe in the tooth fairy, but they'll outgrow it eventually. White evangelicals are the group they openly hate. In fact, the New York Times had an article accusing white evangelicals of being behind the coronavirus.
I was just going to say, we're out of time in this segment. Folks, we are talking to John Smirak, so you won't go away. Why would you? Welcome back. I'm talking to John Smirak, and you, the listener, you get to listen in. I think that's a fair deal. John Smirak, my friend, what else is on your mind? We've been talking about how the secular left is made uncomfortable by public professions of faith. I think rather than get too angry about it ourselves, I mean, the first response should be, of course, outrage at the lunacy of it. But I really think they're afraid. I think that it frightens them because they can see that as time passes and the free market of ideas works its way out, it can take a long time. But you can see things tipping back in America toward the idea that faith is a normal part of life. And I think when they're reminded of that, it just kind of freaks them out. They don't know what to do with it.
I think you're right. They seem to believe that we are always one Trump press conference away from Salem witch trials and the Spanish Inquisition. And I'm confident that that is not, in fact, the case, that we're many press conferences away from that. Way.
I would say like three and a half for sure.
Yeah. It would definitely. I mean, there was a piece at the New York Times asking if white evangelicals were at fault for Donald Trump not taking the coronavirus seriously soon enough.
Right. Now, that one I'm familiar with, and that one really made me angry. Why did it make me angry? Because what the article did, this is really effectively no different at all from genuine racism. It labeled most born-again Christians. And when I say born-again Christians or evangelical Christians, I mean anybody who is a serious Christian, whether Eastern Orthodox or Catholic, anybody who's a serious Christian, it effectively labeled them as science denialist. Right. And I thought to myself, that is the most ridiculous thing I have ever heard. If you do any research, you'll find that some of the greatest scientists who've ever lived were profound Christians, starting with perhaps the greatest scientist in the history of science, Isaac Newton. So when somebody makes a claim like that, it's, let's call it what it is. It's a smear. And for the New York Times to publish something that is that naked of a smear, that upset me.
Well, you know, in times of crisis, people's real personality come out. I call it the George Costanza moment. Remember that episode of Seinfeld where there's a fire at a children's party and George Costanza shoves an old lady on a walker to the floor, climbs over women and children to be the first out the door of the room. In a moment of crisis, your character comes out. And right now, New York Mayor Bill de Blasio's real character is coming out. I've got a piece at stream.org about this. De Blasio was slower than Trump to take coronavirus seriously. He was literally the last person to use the gym in the city of New York because he was there an hour before the city officially legally closed them.
We're not making that up.
He was at the Chinese New Year in Chinatown with the health commissioner telling people, don't worry about it. You need to come to Chinese New Year. It would be racist to avoid Chinatown. Right. This is in February when, you know, Wuhan province should have been locked down when there were people dying by the thousands and Italy was starting to collapse. Now the worm has turned. Bill de Blasio did a press conference saying that if anyone in New York holds a church service or a synagogue service, they're not doing it. Okay, the churches and synagogues have voluntarily closed down. He goes on TV and apropos of nothing says, if you guys have a service, we won't just close it. We will permanently seize your church. We're going to take your property. First of all, how does the mayor have that kind of authority? Why is he threatening people for something that nobody's even doing? I think it's his real personality, his real priorities coming out. Remember, in the 80s, when he was a young man, Bill de Blasio went to Nicaragua to volunteer for that communist regime that was closing and seizing churches. So I think he's just nostalgic for the good old days of church seizing that he remembers when he was a young man in the 1980s.
Yeah, the good old days of church seizing. What fun we had.
One more piece of historical perspective. When the AIDS crisis happened, New York City did not close those bathhouses for years. In fact, mostly their customers just died off. And then New York, after 2 or 3 years of people dying, New York closed the bathhouses. But they're ready to seize the churches.
Bathhouses. No, this is actually, that's a very interesting point. Because if ever there was a place where a truly deadly disease was spread dramatically, exponentially, it was the gay bathhouses, principally in New York and San Francisco. You're quite right about that.
They didn't close them. It would have been homophobic to close them. It would have violated people's basic human right to engage in public anonymous sex during an epidemic. But they're keeping the abortion clinics open in most parts of the country, but they're keeping the churches closed. And if you're in New York City, the mayor's threatening to seize the property. Let's remember, Andrew Cuomo just last year said New York State was no place for pro-lifers, opponents of same-sex marriage, or supporters of the Second Amendment. There's no place in the whole state of New York for such people. If that guy ever got to be president, would there be any place for us in the country?
It's kind of funny. When I was a kid, my dad used to say, if Mayor Lindsay, the liberal mayor of New York, if he ever becomes president, we're all moving back to Greece.
Yeah.
I get that. We're going to go to a break, folks. I'm talking, yes, I am, to John Zmirak. Don't go away.
Make like a Mr. Milquetoast, you'll get shut out. Make like a Mr. Meek, and you'll get cut out.
Hey, folks, welcome back. If you're watching on video, you'll see this is a bunker video. We're not in our normal studios, but what the heck? The whole world's shut down. I'm talking to John Zamirak. Today is April Fool's. John, should we talk about April Fool pranks just for one segment?
Sure, absolutely.
Did you ever do any April Fool pranks or have any done to you?
I'm afraid I've been one of the worst. When I was growing up, I had a kind of an interesting relationship with my mother, who was a very smart, very high-strung, not highly educated New Yorker, Irish-American. She kind of looked and talked like Geraldine Ferraro. And in fact, Geraldine Ferraro was our congresswoman. And because she was pro-abortion, she came to speak at our when she came to speak at our church, my mother went and heckled her until the whole event just degenerated into chaos.
Now, so, you must understand, because I know you had a kind of a rough childhood in some ways as a result of your mother. But the fact that she would go to the church
oh, yeah.
and heckle Ferraro.
That was great.
A feather in your mother's cap. I mean,
oh,
wow.
A jewel in her crown. It was great.
Where did you get the better parts of your personality from? I would say you got some of them from mom. There's no question about that.
Absolutely. But, you know, because of the tensions of April Fool's Day was a day when I would kind of, you know, vent some of those tensions. And one of the things was my mother liked classic Irish-American cuisine, by which I mean Chef Boyardee and ragu out of the jar and box spaghetti and just very simple. She regarded any kind of seasoning as a contaminant. One day I came back from my best friend, Anthony, from his house, and I had eaten his mother's delicious Italian cooking. And she said, "What is that smell coming out of your skin? It's disgusting." And I said, "Mom, that's garlic. It's a seasoning. The Italians use it to impart a quality to food that they call flavor. You might want to try it sometime." And I made sure she did. On April 1st, I put garlic powder in her cough medicine. Not, you know, it's nothing poisonous. It's just garlic powder. She tasted it. She began to panic that she was going to have high blood pressure and a stroke. She called the Poison Control Bureau.
Well, now, wait a minute. First of all, I don't know if you can hear the sirens. That's just to prove that I'm here in Manhattan on shutdown. So that's number one. Okay. But John, how old roughly were you when you did this?
Like 10.
So you put garlic powder
in mom's cough medicine and she called the poison control. Wait, let me finish.
It's medicine, John. This was not in her Irish stew.
She took it every morning. It was for smoke because she smoked. She took cough medicine every single morning because she was a smoker.
Why
so
anyone?
I
okay.
Yeah, so I put garlic powder in. She called the Poison Control Bureau. And the guy said, ma'am, garlic is not toxic in any way. It's a food thing. Are you Irish? And she said, yeah, why? He said, we get this a lot from Irish. Garlic is not toxic.
let me ask you something. So you were 10, you little devil, and you did this to your mom. Now, I guess my question is, at what point did she realize that it was garlic? Did you eventually fess up?
No, she said, "What is this?" I said, "It's garlic." And then she called the Poison Control Bureau because she thought garlic might be toxic.
John, I am pressuring you on the air now as I hear this story. If you do not write a memoir of your life, you are hiding your light under a bushel, my brother, because every time you tell me anything, it's hilarious from that period. You might think it's too painful. It's brilliantly funny.
Is there time for one more prank?
Yes.
All right. We used to live on the second story over an Italian cafe that had a lot of small time mafioso guys hung out there.
Are you what Queens was this?
It's a story. It was called the Cafe Italia, and there were a lot of maybe there were posers, but these were guys who looked like they were Sopranos wannabes. And my mother would play poker with them at the illegal poker games that the Catholic Diocese of Brooklyn sponsored at most of the churches in my childhood. So she knew these guys from the poker games. And she was down there smoking with the mafia guys, and I was leaning a little bit out of our second story window of our apartment. And my mother, who is really overprotective, looks up and starts yelling at me that I'm going to fall out the window and break my head. And I was about 12 at the time, and I was kind of chafing against her overprotectiveness. So I took I took my a set of my clothes and stuffed them with newspaper and stuck a wig head on it and leaned it out the window. Ma, Ma! And I threw it out and it fell right in front of her and the head popped right off. She never jumped so high in her life.
So she bought it.
Well, she sees a body falling out of the window.
Hi, John, I know you've at least officially repented of most of these horrible things that you did. But
yes, yes.
But you didn't do this on April Fool's specifically, did you?
I don't think so. It's just like
generally cruel prank that.
Yeah, I could write a whole book of them, but I've been told I shouldn't publish them.
I really think I'm gonna continue to push you on the air, millions, and also privately that you do need. I think you need to do that.
I should write a memoir of my mother. I have the title already. It's Angela's Ashtray.
That's funny. Actually, so would you focus just on your stories with your mother?
No, I would. I guess I could tell a lot of funny stories about growing up in New York, in Queens in the 70s. As I said, all our churches had illegal poker games, and my mother was a compulsive gambler. So I constantly heard the names like Saint Fidelis, Precious Blood, Sacred Heart, Saint Joseph. And when I hear these names to this day, I first think poker. Then I have to remind myself, no. Originally, these were Catholic parishes named after mysteries of the Catholic faith. I just think of poker because of associations.
I'm telling you, if you don't write this stuff, I'm going to come there. I'm going to crawl through the internet and I'm going to find you. And because every time I talk to you about this stuff, I think you just don't realize how generally funny it is.
It's comedy gold.
It's funny and entertaining. And you better – you're so prolific. You have no excuse. You have no excuse not to write this stuff down. Angela's Ashtray is a brilliant title. I expect to have you on this program to discuss that book soon, John. I don't know how you're going to pull it off. But
I'll figure it out.
Out of time, my friend. April Fool's Day to you. God bless
you. Too.
Thank you for everything you do on this program and for stream.org. And, folks, we will be right back. Hey, folks, welcome back. I hope you've been enjoying our show with John Zmirak. It's April Fool's Day, and we decided in hour two to run our April Fool 2019 interview with the great Mike Lindell, who at the White House the other day was exhorting people to pray and spend time with their family. We love him so much. We said we need to re-air this. And by the way, when you order from MyPillow.com, please tell all your friends to use the discount code Eric. Otherwise, you do not get our whopping discount, and it's a good one. Okay, Chris Himes, we've got to finish real quick. So for years, I go around the country speaking all over the place, and people come up to me, and they'll bring up the April Fool's thing, and many of them don't know that we were kidding.
Yeah, it was a real tour de force of radio drama performance. I thought you really pulled it off. Yeah, you said, oh, he jumped. And then you started screaming.
I actually played it so real that I convinced myself in the hotel room in Georgia that someone had just jumped. So I kind of freaked out. And then I thought, oh my God. Oh, my God. Oh, thank the Lord. Thank the Lord. He had a parachute. He's like a base jumper. Oh, we had no idea. I went on and on and on. And then we ended the show and tons of people thought that was real. And so I've been apologizing for that for years.
That's acting 101. If you believe it, they'll believe it.
I'll believe anything.
Okay.
Now, Alvin, don't you have some historical. So an hour or two, we got Mike Lindell coming up. Exciting. Tomorrow, we got to announce this. Tomorrow.
Yeah.
We have Katie Hopkins on the show, folks. Katie Hopkins. That's amazing. That is amazing. Do not miss tomorrow's show.
We all the way from England, all the way from England in the bunker. So there you go. No, I have a little history of April Fool's Day. Okay. Why do we call people April Fools? And I did this on World Radio about 3 or 4 years ago when I was doing the Offbeat Newsbeat report. Okay. So it's really about two calendars. There was the Gregorian calendar that came out in around the 1500s or something, but there was the Julius Caesar calendar that's, you know, from like 46 BC. Now, Christians in the early days, they used to celebrate the beginning of the new year on April 1st, believe it or not, in the early, early days, because when Jesus rose from the dead, he started a brand new life for all of us. So they wanted to celebrate April 1st to be the new year. But the Gregorian calendar, this is Pope Gregory the 13th. Yeah, Pope Gregory the 13th, and around about 1600 years later or whatever, he decided to make it January 1st. Okay, and then everybody got on the same page that January 1st was New Year's. So on April 1st, some of the old folks wouldn't get back on board. So they used to celebrate the new year, and so they were called April Fools because they wouldn't get on with the program that January 1st was now the beginning of the year, not April 1st. So it goes way back to like the 15 somethings or others. So that's Pope Gregory the 13th.
You, sir, are a very treasury of historical information. That's incredible. I've never heard that, Albin.
Yep. I researched.
It's not even true.
It may not be. That may be an April Fool's thing itself. But no, I actually researched that in Fun Facts Friday and all that stuff. Whatever. Okay, let's get back to you.
I love that. Well, we're done with hour one. We had a wonderful time talking to John Smirak. In hour two, folks, Mike Lindell. And remember, please use the code ERIC when you order from MyPillow.com. What a kooky day. All right. And we'll have more fresh from the bunker tomorrow.